It's a minute after 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Mercy Sua. In the headlines, Ghana Gas worried over frequent breakdown of compressor on FPSO. Today marks 49 years of overthrow of Ghana's first president, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. 5 Nigerian mobile phone fraudsters arrested. Central African states pledge military support for ECOWAS to deal with Boko Haram. And Russian president says war with Ukraine is unlikely. The Ghana National Gas Company has expressed concern over the frequent breakdown of the compressor on the offshore production platform FPSO Kwame Nkrumah and the inability of the Volta River Authority VRA to consume the processed gas. According to Ghana Gas, the situation is having a serious financial repercussion on the company as the final commercial commissioning date of the project has elapsed. It also said Ghana Gas is not able to meet the simple demand of 60 million standard cubic feet by the VRA to power its generating units at Abwadzi. A source at VRA said the volume of gas required from Ghana Gas to power its plants is irregular, and the only explanation was a compressor failure on the FPSO. In an interview, the chief executive of Ghana Gas, Dr. George Sipayanki, said the company has done enough with regards to the commissioning of the facility to its fullest operational competence. He said currently the plant is receiving about 39 million standard cubic feet, which is far lower than the 140 million the operators had promised. He was hopeful supply from offshore improves to enable it to ramp up to 55 million standard cubic feet for VRA's daily consumption. Senior lecturer at the University of Ghana School of Law, Maxwell Opoku Ajimang, has welcomed moves to introduce non-custodial sentencing as a means of decongesting the prisons. He said the policy of remand should be thoroughly reviewed. Speaking to Radio Ghana, lawyer Opoku Ajimang said remand should not be used as a form of punishment, hence the need for the policy to be re-examined.
Remand should not be used as a form of punishment. You see, because if I go on remand and you send me to prison and I am acquitted and discharged, well, how are you going to get that freedom that you took away from me back? You cannot get it. So, and then it is not only narcotics. Sometimes I think that when we are calling for this reform, we should also tune the minds of judges and magistrates and the way they use remand. Because sometimes a taxi driver comes to court, then the taxi driver pleads not guilty. Instead of proceeding to deal with the matter instantly, they say, go remand 2 weeks. Sometimes remand is used also as a form of custodial punishment.
Okay.
And that one is from the judicial side. So that one, we can look at it and that judges to consider the policy of this. And I'm happy we are submitting a non-custodial. And if they are submitting non-custodial policy, then I think that's train our mind that we should also look at the policy of remand again. That we should not use remand to punishing people as if they have been convicted.
The public relations officer of the Ghana Prison Service, DSP Vitalis Aye, said amnesty granted by government is one means used to decongest the prisons. He said decongestion of the prisons has been an age-old problem.
It has always been a problem managing prison populations in Ghana. If you look at our population that shot up from 6 million at independence to 25 million as we speak now or plus, and our capacity rather has reduced. The prison capacity at independence was 7,000. Today as we speak, we are 25 million. The prison capacity has reduced, but we lost some prisons to the sea. Eta, Anamabo, Oshaford, Jamesford have been lost to the sea. Okofu in the Atlantic region has been lost because it was dilapidated. But then the population has increased and crime has increased. So we are dealing with a prisoner population that is more than 10 times the number we should have. And this comes with its attendant problems. Sickness, even feeding them becomes a problem. So what the prison service has done over the years is like a ritual that every year amnesty is granted by government.
CRO of Ghana Prison Service, DSP Vitalis Aye. The Minister for the Interior, Marco Yongo, has presented a report on non-custodial sentencing policy for Ghana to the Chief Justice, Mrs. Georgina Wood, in Accra, with a call on the judiciary to amend some laws on justice delivery, particularly for people who commit minor crimes. This will help decongest the country's prisons. Mr. Yongo suggested that if such people were made to engage in community work as punishment, it would be better than keeping them in prisons together with hardcore criminals. Sefako Fekpe and Inokwe were there for Radio Ghana and have filed this report.
The report on non-custodial sentencing policy for Ghana recommends that judges be trained and oriented to utilize the options available within the legal framework. The report comes on the heels of the recent attempted jailbreak at the Kumasi Central Prisons and the need to decongest the various prisons. The Minister for the Interior, Marco Yongo, called for support to assist the ministry craft the appropriate legal framework to expand the non-custodial sentencing options available to judges with the aim of decongesting the prisons.
The best way to decongest the prisons is to implement the non-custodial sentence, because people are in prison for very minor cases. The example of the young man in Kufurudwa who stole 1.5 tubers of yam and he's in prison for 10 years. How much is a tuber of yam? And is there at our expense? Such a person should have been asked to go and do for a community service. So decongesting the prisons is fine, but we need to come out with this non-custodial sentencing. We also need to look at the remand prisoners. People have been on remand for a very long time. When I was at Kufurudwa prisons, there was somebody who said he was on remand for 6 years without justice. And for me, this is unacceptable. We are the same people who say justice delayed is justice denied, and yet we put some people there on remand for 6 years without justice. If you are put in remand and they are not judging your case because the police don't have the evidence to prosecute you, I don't see why you should travel beyond a certain period. If they are not getting the evidence, they should be granted their freedom.
The Chief Justice, Mrs. Georgina Wood, who received the report, said the judiciary would lead in the effort to decongest the prisons. She bemoaned the country's weakness of implementing policies. She bemoaned the country's weakness of implementing policies.
From the perspective of the judiciary, we do recognize that we must lead in the effort. The effort to decongest our prisons and ensure that only those who truly are deserving of being deserving in inverted commas of spending time in jail end up in the prison. And what we intend to do is to ensure continuing judicial training and retraining of our judges and magistrates, particularly judges and magistrates of the lower bench, that is the circuit court and the magistrates. I think they handle more criminal cases than even the high courts. What we ought to be doing and what we ought to be looking at now is to increase the number of courts that deal with criminal cases in both the circuit and then the high court, and that should not present any difficulties for us, particularly by the beginning of the next legal year.
The Attorney General, the Office of the Chief Justice and the Ministry of the Interior are considering the review of a criminal code to introduce community service as one of the punishments for minor offences.
Sefako Fefe and Inokwe's report. The National Peace Council is calling for circumspection on how to resolve the wearing of hijab in schools. Some Muslim groups in Takrady in the Western region last week demonstrated in protest against the wearing of the hijab. It said the controversy should not be seen as an issue between Muslims and Christians. Speaking to Radio Ghana, the chairman of the National Peace Council, Reverend Professor Emmanuel Asante, warned of blowing the issue out of proportion.
I think we're making too much of this role, and we're finding it, I'm afraid. Maybe you want to read the Ghanaian Times' editorial, which I totally agree with. You know, it's in isolated places, certain things are happening, dealing with it. But I think we're giving it too much of the coverage in the country as to create, you know, we're creating some sort of panic all over the place. I would wish that, you know, we try our best to handle it carefully. because this is a religious kind of thing. Any misinformation, any kind of impression that is created that it's so massive in the country would lead to all sorts of. I would say that let us be very circumspect. I would be prepared to talk, but I'm just saying that all the private FMs are talking about it, they are calling me here and there. It's some of them, I even heard them. It's as if the whole country is, you know, but this is a nice, this is an isolated case. When the parliamentary caucus themselves came, they admitted that. That, you know, in Catholic schools, in some Methodist schools, in some other places, Muslims are permitted to do whatever they want to do. It's just that in all situations you might find, you know, and what they are talking about is not just even in mission schools, it's in public places. It depends upon who is inside. You know, so we're getting it all wrong.
As the chairman of the National Peace Council, how will you advise that these cases should be handled? Because he said it is being blown out of proportion.
Yes, I would say that, you know, yes, a few people in the Western region went on the demonstration. This was 2 days after the issue had been brought formally to the National Peace Council. We're dealing with the issue, and we would plead with all, you know, with those who feel agitated by what has happened to remain calm, not to, you know, blow it out of proportion. We lived in this country, attended school with Muslims, we've gone to Muslim schools, they've gone to Christian schools. You know, if we are not very careful and we blow these things out of proportion, it's not in the interest of your own, of our country, but in the interest of the majority Christians who are here and all that.
You heard Chairman of National Peace Council, Reverend Professor Emmanuel Asante, talking to Bright and Trauma. The West African Network for Peace Building, WANEP, has received $2.5 million support from USAID to replicate Ghana's democratic and election success in 5 West African countries which have been hit by election violence. Speaking at the signing of the agreement in Accra, the executive director of WANEP, Chukwumeka Eze, said the move will help countries to detect early electoral disputes and mitigate them in the upcoming 2015 and 2016 elections. Priscilla Apia and Dora Togbo have found this report.
The executive director of WANEP, Chukwumeka Eze, says the grants will support Niger, Cote d'Ivoire, Burkina Faso, Sierra Leone and Guinea, which have over the years been confronted with electoral dispute, to tap into Ghana's success story. He said WANEP, through this initiative, will ensure that state institutions and civil society organizations respond primarily to issues of electoral disputes in their countries.
Ghana has been able to maintain its democracy over the years and share those experiences with such countries, Cote d'Ivoire, Burkina Faso, that have had challenges with issues of their election. These other countries have their own level of democracy at a different level. So we want to support them to be at par with Ghana. We want to build the capacity of our state institutions. We want to build the capacity of our civil society organizations to be the first to respond to issues relating to electoral disputes in their various countries.
The director of USAID West African Regional Missions, Alexander Depress, was optimistic that the project will help to resolve electoral conflict in the sub-region for free and fair elections to prevail.
Help leaders in the region were there to be election-related violence and to provide early warning to that effect. Strengthen WANEP's network in the region for all of to have early warning systems in place were some election-related violence. Peace and security issues are very, very important. We hope we can resolve all of the issues around them in the next 5 years so that we can not only identify potential crises around elections but also help to mitigate that violence and respond to that violence so that democracy, fair and free elections can be held in the region.
Priscilla Apia and Dora Togbo filed that report. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra. The major stories: Ghana gas worried over frequent breakdown of compressor on FPSO. Today marks 49 years of overthrow of Ghana's first president, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. 5 Nigerian mobile phone fraudsters arrested. Central African states pledge military support for ECOWAS to deal with Boko Haram. And Russian president says war with Ukraine is unlikely. Please stay with us. Welcome back. 49 years ago today, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, president of Ghana, was on his way to Hanoi, Vietnam, to resolve the Vietnam War. Back home, his own country, which he had helped to liberate from British colonial rule, was in turmoil. Soldiers led by Lieutenant Colonel Emmanuel Kotuka and Major Kwesi Afrifa overthrew the CPP government and made sure Nkrumah did not make a return trip to Ghana and to power again. After several stops and starts with democratic rule, the country now has political stability with successful elections of four presidents. However, political stability alone does not propel economic development. Joyce Jechi, on the anniversary of Nkrumah's forcible exit from power, takes a retrospective look at Nkrumah's energy policy in the face of what's known as Dumsor power phenomenon in the country.
In physics, power or electricity is defined as the ability to do work. Without it, everything is at a halt. It is therefore not surprising that the energy crisis now has brought economic hardship to Ghanaians and has affected every aspect of society. Industries are forced to cut down on production, leading to unemployment. Hospitals are affected. Small businesses and education, just to mention a few. Education, as the first president, and indeed every president sees it as the basis of development, and this is not left out in this mess. The Secretary General of the All African Students Union, Fred Awa, talks about how the power crisis is affecting tertiary education.
Students these days stay at the universities, and you know it's expensive to buy food in the cities, so they cook. For those who use electricity, it is a challenge for them. In the evenings when they want to study, no electricity. Remember, we have very large lecture halls in our universities these days, 200 students plus in one lecture hall. If there is no electricity, definitely no microphones would work. And that means that it will impair the learning process in the classroom. You see, it goes even beyond just the students and then the lecturers. Anything that has to do with the university environment.
Children now have to go back and learn the same ways their grandparents did. The current crop of politicians have the best of education and uninterrupted power to achieve what they have, because Dr. Kwame Nkrumah knew that electricity is the driving force for economic development. Dr. Nkrumah, at the commissioning of the Akosombo Dam, announced projects in place prior to the approval of loans for the dam.
That whether we succeeded in raising loans or not, we would go ahead with the scheme from our own resources. I therefore gave orders for the primary works to be constructed, namely the Tema Akosombo Highway, the necessary access roads to the site, and the building of a new township in Akosombo.
A former diplomat, Mr. K.B. Asante, says Nkrumah would have been shocked if he were alive to witness the energy crisis.
Oh, he would be shocked. He would be shocked. Because Nkrumah realized the importance of energy for industrial development. As a matter of fact, Akosombo was not only to produce electricity, but to help with the irrigation of Accra Plains. Then the energy was to help eventually to produce aluminum from the bauxite deposit at the Yenahin, and also after producing the aluminum, to use aluminum to fabricate other aluminum products. Now, we didn't have the money. He had to go to the World Bank.
He took that bold step of going for a 30-year loan for that purpose, despite criticisms from his opponents. Due to his vision, he knew the Akosombo Dam was not going to be enough to generate power as population grows. So the Bui Dam was the next target in his development plan. Nkrumah's strong desire to ensure that Ghana had sufficient, cheaper and cleaner source of energy for industrial development never rested on his oars until the Nuclear Atomic Energy Project took off in 1961. The Deputy Director General of the Ghana Atomic Energy Commission, GAEC, Professor Kwame Abo, paraphrases a statement by Dr. Nkrumah when he commissioned GAEC.
Nkrumah had a realistic view of energy, and if you read the statement carefully, he said they didn't enter atomic energy for any prestige, because it promises to be the largest source of energy, which will help them overcome their developmental challenges.
This project did not go without criticism. It was said to be a prestigious project and attracted an inquiry by Nobel laureate Sir John Cockcroft, whose report described the GAEC project as unnecessary. But this was later rebuffed. Professor Abba says the energy crisis the nation is experiencing is due to failure to plan over the past 15 years.
We've thrown it into our local politics that we are missing that key fact. That energy is not something you plan and do ad hoc.
The 1966 coup has been described by many as having taken the nation many years back, but for critics of Nkrumah, his dictatorial and economic situation at that time were factors. A former educationist who wants to remain anonymous said no matter the situation, coups cannot be justified.
I don't think we can equate that period with the current situation. I think currently it's just that the city is just like turning on the tap.
Mr. KB Asante and the ASUU General Secretary Fred Awa, like most people, support the recent Dusop demonstration organized by the opposition.
The struggle for today feels strongly about something. To let it be known to the powers and peace that they feel it. I think the democratic state, they have a right to go on demonstration.
Now, I also respect the rights of citizens to go demonstrating legally, just to drum home the fact that we elected you to resolve issue problems for us.
Thanks to Ghana's democratic dispensation, which allows free expression of grievances so that no built-up anger will warrant any overthrow of an elected government. The energy crisis has adversely affected every sector of the economy. Positively, however, Ghanaians have learned to conserve energy in a way. The crisis has forced Ghanaians to iron in bulk, turn off some appliances when not in use, and hopefully appreciating the need to pay realistic electricity tariffs if that will prevent a recurrence of those situations. Utility providers must also put in place measures to address wastage and ensure efficiency.
Joyce Jechi, in that write-up on the 1966 coup, looked at Dr. Nkrumah's vision on energy. The Dean of Graduate Studies of the Methodist University College of Ghana, Professor Kuti Awusi, says metropolitan, municipal and district assemblies should be empowered or resourced to employ the youth in the areas of environmental hygiene to ensure sustainable development. He said getting the solution to youth unemployment demands comprehensive planning in all aspects of national policy. Professor Awusi was delivering the 48 J.B. Dankwa Memorial Lectures in Accra on the theme Human Capital and Economic Growth in Ghana. Yaya Kwamwa has filed this report.
Professor Kuti Awusi said the growing unemployment rate in the country demands a holistic approach. This, he said, can be achieved if the MMDAs are given the free hand to take certain critical decisions, including the power to engage the youth in all sectors of the economy. Professor Awusi further explained the concept of human capital, which he said entails investment in education and health. According to him, the more one invests in education, the more he or she broadens her knowledge to solve societal problems, hence the higher income he earns. The three-day lecture will examine human capital and economic growth in Ghana since 1970 to 2013 and the future of education, health and oil in the economic growth of Ghana.
A report by Yaya Kwamwa. The Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, has pledged to work closely with ECOWAS to fight the scourge of Boko Haram on the continent. The president of Equatorial Guinea, Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo, and his Congolese counterpart, Denis Sassou Nguesso, arrived at the decision after hours of a closed-door meeting with ECOWAS chairman, President John Mahama, at Pediasi Lodge near Bri. In line with this, a meeting of security and defense experts of countries hit by Boko Haram has been scheduled for next week at Yaoundé, Cameroon, to map out strategies. President Mbasogo said it has become necessary for member states to join forces to fight terrorist acts. Pascaline Adadevo reports.
At the last African Union summit in Yaoundé, Cameroon, it was agreed that a multinational joint force against Boko Haram be formed and deployed to affected member states. At that meeting, the presidents of Congo and Equatorial Guinea, Denis Sassou Nguesso and Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo, were asked to consult with the ECOWAS chairman, President John Mahama, to discuss into details further strategies needed to fight Boko Haram. This became necessary because it was President Mahama who first mooted the idea of a joint force to fight the terrorist groups. After a closed-door meeting with President Mahama, the two representatives of the Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, resolved to pool resources and join ECOWAS to find a lasting end to the threat of Boko Haram. President of Equatorial Guinea Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo, who spoke on behalf of his colleagues, said ECCAS has come to the realization that Boko Haram needs to be fought head-on, employing innovative strategies as their operations have the tendency to escalate. According to him, it is no longer a Nigeria issue. President Nguema Mbasogo spoke through an interpreter.
Initially, we thought that the problem of Boko Haram was an issue of the Nigerian nation only, but we have realized that this is escalating so much. We cannot and we should not in any way undermine or overlook the situation of Boko Haram. Under the banner of solidarity, member nations have to come together, and we have realized that we have to come together and put our resources and face Boko Haram square, so as to be able to crush it entirely and give it no room for resurgence. We realize that if we do not do so, this can go beyond what we are seeing today. It will affect other nations that are neighboring nations with those affected today. We have all come to a certain number of accords, and we are going to move forward. What actually remains today at this moment is to pull our forces together and move ahead and do what we are meant to do.
The Economic Community of Central African States, ECCAS, has summoned a meeting of security and defense experts of countries affected by Boko Haram next week at Yaoundé, Cameroon, to delve further into strategies to be adopted.
Pascaline Adadevo reporting. 5 Nigerians suspected to be behind the use of text messages to swindle about 7,000 MTN subscribers have been arrested by the police. The suspects allegedly circulated text messages that falsely indicated the receiver had emerged as winner of a promotion run by the network provider. According to the police, 10,600 subscribers reported receiving such messages in 2014. This year alone, 1,400 of such cases have been recorded. Russian President Vladimir Putin says war with neighboring Ukraine is unlikely. Mr. Putin also stressed his support for the recent Minsk ceasefire deal as the best way to stabilize eastern Ukraine. Ukraine says Russian troops have been fighting its forces, but Mr. Putin has repeatedly denied it. And a single mother of 4, including one with cerebral palsy, is claiming her share of a $564 million Powerball jackpot. Mariah Holmes, 26, of North Carolina, bought one of 3 winning tickets worth $127 million. Ms. Holmes bought 10 tickets for the draw earlier this month and won one. She said the best part of the winning was being able to provide for her children. At a news conference where she was presented with a check, Ms. Holmes said she plans to donate part of it to her church, travel, complete her university degree, and buy her mother a house. To end the news, the main points again. The Ghana Gas Company is worried over frequent breakdown of the compressor on FPSO. Today marks 49 years of the overthrow of Ghana's first president, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, and Russian president says war with Ukraine is unlikely. The news was presented by Mercy Sowa in Accra.